1, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limark Technical Net. The Limark Technical Net has been going strong since 1982, and this is tonight's little episode of it. People remind them of a few things coming up and of the places that you can look for further information. If you have any mailbag questions, there aren't any mailbag questions, unfortunately, for tonight, but if you have any technical mailbag questions and you can't reach the technical net, or if you have any topics that you would like covered, or if you would like to suggest a topic for the science talk or puzzlers for the science talk, or if you would like me to tell Paul about a article or a website that you found and want to see what his take might be on it. The easiest way to contact us is through an email address, and that is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. Links to any articles that I cite will be available on my link page, and that is at roy.ac2gs.com. Again, roy.ac2gs.com. We maintain a chat room for people to kind of hang out and talk back and forth to each other. You can get there by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. And if anyone needs an audio stream, they can't get to the repeater or they can't use Echolink, then we provide an audio stream on the Internet as well. Just have them point their browser at technet.ac2gs.com. And you'll be able to hear everything the same way that I hear it here at my shack. Also, archives of the past about 14 years worth of, I think 12 years worth of the TechNet is available at Mike, AC2NJI's website, which is amateurradio.tv. And so I think it starts at something like 2006 or 2008. I have to check again during September. And he has all of them going forward to just last Sunday. So if you have any questions about any archives or you want to listen to Dick or John or Mel, they're available on archive. So keep that in mind. Let me drop for a second. Okay, as always, the way we're going to run this is we're going to try the first hour will be technical questions, and if you have enough technical questions and it bleeds over to the second hour, that's fine. If not, I will tell you a little bit of a completion story about last week's mailbag question. And we'll get to the science talk segment, and we have some non-virus related stories, we have some virus related stories, and you're always free to ask me any science or technical question. And then about 10:15 or so, we will have Paul, WS2S, with the space report. So I will ask if anyone out there has any questions of a technical nature, if they would like to ask them, or topics to discuss, or comments to be made. Simply hit that push-to-talk button, give me your first name and your call sign.
Gabe, KB2MAR. Ed, K2GJE.
Les, K2TGW.
Greg, N1POP.
Okay, I hope I have this correct. Gabe, KD2MAR. Ed, K2GJE. Les, I think it's KD2TGW, I'm not sure. And Mike is NYPOB.
Now, Rich, Whiskey 2, Bravo Zulu. And Greg, N1POB.
Okay, very good. We have a nice long list of people, so that's going to be great. Gabe, what's your question for tonight, Gabe?
I just think you tell everybody on the net there. I have a basic question. Is Limewalk going to be having their field day this year? Is there going to be any restrictions? And if Limewalk does have their field day, will they be violating any ARRL rules in any way? In other words, can they bend the rules a little bit over to their right?
Okay, Gabe. Well, it's a shame we don't have someone in the executive board of Limewalk. Maybe we do. If there's anyone out there who has specific facts about how field day is going to be affected by this coronavirus, please hit that push-to-talk button.
K2TGW.
Yes, Les.
Okay. There will be no field day as we know it. Field day will have to be done from home. It has been discussed a number of times on the InfoNet. I think if you hit the Limewalk page, there's some wording about that. But it has to be done from home. Now the argumentations, if you're doing it from commercial power or emergency power, and that part's still up in the air. Back to net.
Okay, thanks a lot, Les. Gabe, does that answer it to you for you as best you can? You know, all these things are in a bit of flux, but I'm not terribly optimistic about anything making more sense than it does presently.
It makes perfect sense. As a matter of fact, that was the same idea I had with my club, the Yonkers Amateur Radio Club, having it done from each individual's home. And then tallying up the scores and giving it to the person in charge, then sending it into the ARRL. But they were saying something about that it's against the rules for field day. Each person, for that to work operating at home, you'd have to be within 1,000 feet of each other. Can't be over 1,000 feet. Now, I don't know if they're gonna make that fly, that rule. I'm not sure. But that's the only way you can, in this situation, it's the only way you can have field day is to do it this way. You can't just basically go in a group. It's still unlawful at this time to go as a group for fear of transferring the virus further. You can't do that, so you got to make it work. So I guess it's okay to bend the rules a little bit. I mean, this is a different.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Gabe. And the ARRL kind of can be obsessive compulsive at times. I've dealt with them about kind of bending some rules, and they don't like to bend any rules. But I think at this point, if they don't allow themselves to be flexible on this, it'll just be a disaster. So my gut sense is that's what field day is going to amount to. It's going to be somewhat different, and there'll be a little asterisk in the record book about the points, although, as we all know, field day is not a contest, even though they do give you points. So I think that's what it's going to come down to. This has been an extraordinary year, and there's been a lot of unprecedented changes, and the ARRL will just have to be flexible enough for this event.
I guess that's what's going to have to happen. All right, Roy. Thanks for the info there. Thanks for answering my question. KG2CS. I forgot that call sign right. This is KB2MAR.
Okay, very good, Gabe. Ed, K2GJE, you had a question or a comment tonight?
Good evening. I've been restoring a 1950 boat anchor, and I'm down to needing one part. I need a meter for the final amplifier. I don't think I'm going to find it. I think I'm looking for a needle in a haystack. I'm looking for a meter that fits in a 2 1/8-inch hole. I have a couple of sources to call. I've been compiling a list because you can't make any calls over the weekend. The Triplet Meter Corporation still exists, and I know of LNL, and I know of KRP. There used to be a place in Manhattan, I think it was 6th Avenue near Canal Street. I think he was called Nielsen that repaired meters, but I doubt that he exists. I think I'm showing my age. Anyone have any ideas? Over.
Okay, very good, Ed. Well, we'll take comments from anyone out there who, if they know how to get some kind of legacy meter from the good old days. I would add a question to Ed. Have you tried any of the major electronic parts retailers, Mauser and the other big companies? They seem to have massive catalogs. I'm not saying definitely you would find the meter that you're longing for, but have you tried to find out if there's something similar in a modern, probably Chinese or Japanese version?
No on that. Okay, that's a good idea. There's Mauser and there's DigiKey. I don't have internet access at this time, and I'm not bringing anyone into the house. But I have a friend that's doing some research for me. I'm going to ask him to look at Mauser and DigiKey. That's an idea. I think I'm really in a bind because on the back of the meter it said made in England, and that 2 1/8 inch measurement may really be a bastard size. I'll have to think of something else, but there's no room to put a larger meter in. And if I put the meter in the power supply, it reads also the modulation current and swings all over the place. This has been quite an undertaking. I can tell you what I've done so far to it. Over.
WHCDO.
Yes, Andy.
Describe what kind of meter you're looking for. I might have it.
Okay, I tell you what I'm looking for. The original meter was square. I could settle on round. It only means drilling some other holes. It measured 2 1/8 inch. The original one read 0 to 300 milliamps, but I could fake it out with a 0 to 1 milliamp and have it read 3 volts across a 10 ohm resistor. Over.
What's the diameter of the hole that has to be that mounts the meter? What's that diameter?
2 1/8 inches. 2 1/8 inches. Over.
Okay, I'll give a look. See what I can come up with. I got I have hundreds of meters.
You want my phone number? I don't mind giving it out. It has to fit in a 2 1/8 inch hole. Over.
Yeah, give me your phone number or email address. Either one.
No, my email is down at the moment. I'll give you my home phone. Area code 631-567. 6155. Over.
I got it. And you're Ed, E-D?
I'm Ed, K2GJE. Over.
Okay, Ed, I'll get back to you.
A blessing on your head. Over.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much, Andy, as always. Andy has a massive stockpile of spare parts, so if Andy doesn't have a meter that would fit, I would be amazed. And by the way, Ed, even though it's of English design, if you remember, it was only in 1965 that the English moved from our way of measuring things to the metric system. So it's very possible that back then they were still doing things in inches. You'll still find the occasional English person talking about feet and inches. So sometimes the metric system hasn't completely converted everyone.
Okay, thank you so much. Go after someone else's problem. Over.
Okay, thanks, Ed, for participating tonight. Les, do you have a question or a comment tonight?
I have a question. Mother Nature, the gardeners, and Time in Memoriam have torn down some of my antennas. Now, I had a 20-meter dipole. It has been sort of detached in one end, and the other end is stuck in a tree. Getting older, so I don't feel like climbing if I don't have to too much. My question is, your normal dipole is hung sort of parallel to the ground. What if I made it at, say, a 45-degree angle? Would it change the pattern of transmission that much, or is it still just going to be broadside? Or am I going to lose something or gain something because it's at, a 45-degree angle? Back to Ned.
Okay, Les, well, I'll give you my 2 cents worth, and I'll ask the other people listening in for their sense of the answer to the question. The problem, as you know, with horizontals is that they're somewhat height sensitive. If you bring them too low towards the ground, there are ground absorption and there's ground reflection. If you bring a perfectly fine half-wave horizontal dipole down close to the ground, you'll develop such a high takeoff angle that you'll get an almost near-vertical incident skywave. It'll go straight up, and it'll give you nice local communications, but no DXing. If you and the most important part of the dipole that you have to think about is most of the current is towards the center of the dipole. The voltage peaks are on the edges, and the current peaks are in the middle where the center feed is. So it's more important where the location is for the area around the center feed. If it's reasonably high up, you should get some significantly dipole-like radiation pattern. You might get a little bit of a distortion, but I can't see where it would twist the radiation pattern too much. You just have to keep it up to a certain height so that you don't get the ground absorption or the reflection. But I'd be interested if anyone has had any experience with putting their dipoles instead of an inverted V, which is a very common way. Instead of that, if they put it at a 45 angle like a sloper, and if they've seen anything different that way. I'd love to hear.
K2GJE, comment?
Yes, Ed.
I believe a lot in SWR meters. If it is made resonant, it'll radiate. What kind of pattern it's going to have, or whether it's going to be good locally or better for DX, no guarantee on that. But I would put it up. I would look at the SWR meter and see if it says I got to make the ends a little longer or the ends a little shorter by seeing, by moving the VFO around and see where the system is resonant over.
Well, I would agree with you entirely, Ed. You know, as Dick often said, you resonate and then you radiate. I'm assuming that Les is, knows full well of how to use his standing wave ratio meter or a vector network analyzer or a noise bridge or what have you, and that we were kind of more discussing efficiency and takeoff angles and radiation patterns. But that's a good point, Ed. Anyone else with any observations about half-wave dipoles that are configured at a 45-degree angle from the ground? Gosh, I guess there's no opinions otherwise out there. Les, I think, again, if you have some kind of decent elevation, I don't think you're going to have any problem with that configuration.
Well, one leg should be above the second floor. It should be close to 30 feet up. The other leg, I don't know. I have to see how far, what I can attach the other side to. I would love to make it an inverted V, but on this side of the house, there's too many other things in the way, so that's not going to happen. But I would have the center point, the feed line or a feed point will be maybe 20 to 25 feet up. So I'm not going to lose anything on elevation. I'm just wondering if the radiation pattern would be changed drastically because it's not parallel. Other than that, I know it's going to work. It's just how good is it going to work? Back to you, Roy. K2 TGW.
Okay, Les, I can understand that. Well, I mean, I can't see why it should be terrible. It might be a wee bit lopsided, but I don't think that's going to make a significant difference in the performance. But, you know, you'll try it out, and hopefully you'll come back and tell us how it all went.
Will do, will do. I hear next weekend's supposed to be warm again, so we'll try. All right. Thanks for the help. Back to Ned. This is K2 TGW.
You're welcome, Les. Next up is Greg. Greg, you have a question or a comment for tonight? POB? Well, once again, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limark Technical Net. I also want to remind everyone that next Friday, May 29th at 9 p.m., we are going to have a radio wake in memory of a Silent Key, a great man, and a wonderful ham that gave so much to the community. Dick, K2RIW. So once again, put the pencil pad into your calendar on May 29th at 9 p.m. here. We're going to go into the night as long as someone is available to talk with me. I will be net control, and I hope we have a good long night telling great stories of all the great things that Dick has taught us and told us and memories that we have of him. So once again, there were two people left on my list we haven't gotten to, Rich W2BZ, but there was another gentleman that I wrote down, his name is Greg, that didn't respond. So if there's another person that I missed on the list there, please call out your name. Okay, someone was transmitting without any audio, so maybe their microphone isn't quite working right.
K2RMD, late check-in.
Hello, R&D. Do you have a question for tonight, or are you just checking in?
Matter of fact, I do have a question. In fact, something catastrophic might have just happened to my HF radio, and I could use some help with it if I'm not cutting the line or getting in the way of anyone. Over.
Well, there's one person before you. When we get done with him, unless it's an emergency, we'll get to you. What's your first name again?
It's not an emergency. My first name is Russell, R-U-S-S-E-L-L, Russell.
Okay, Russell, so we'll take you after Rich, W2BZ. Rich, what's your question or your topic tonight?
Well, hello, everybody. By the way, great audio tonight, Roy. The question is this. As you know, and some other people know, I am getting myself a DMR radio and also its analog, 2 and 440. I have the antenna I'm speaking on now is cut exactly for this frequency. But I have another antenna up there that's cut for, and these are vertical dipoles, that are cut, that's cut for 500 megahertz. And I was just wondering, if I'm looking to operate on 440, could I leave the one that's cut for 500 megahertz without too much loss of signal?
Well, I would assume that you can. In many ways, it's the same situation as a fan dipole. If you have a if you have one feed line feeding into two different radiators, one of which is resonant and one of which is non-resonant, the non-resonant impedance mismatch would cause most of the current to go into the properly tuned antenna. Most people tend not to do that, as far as I'm aware, for UHF and VHF, but as I said before, I have a fan dipole that operates on that very principle, and it seems to work fine. Are you out there, Rich? W2BZ.
Yeah, I'm out here. I didn't hear any audio coming from you at all. What I was saying is this is two separate feed lines. In other words, they're entirely two different antennas. They happen to be strapped to the same pole, but masked, but they're two entirely different antennas.
Okay, so how close are the radiating elements of the two antennas?
The top of the bottom element is the 500 megahertz. The bottom antenna is 500 megahertz, and the top element of that vertical, of that 500 megahertz vertical, is only maybe a quarter inch from the bottom of the top antenna, which is the 2 meter vertical.
Okay, but obviously they're not in the exact same position, otherwise they would touch and short themselves out. So there's some degree of separation between the two radiators in the horizontal axis.
And once again, these are vertical dipoles, and oh, you're talking about the distance between the two radiators of the same antenna rather than the distance between the radiators of the separate antennas. I would say half inch is the distance between the two radiators.
Okay, that's a curious thing. You know, Dick used to mention that different antennas are kind of blind to their non-resonant frequency, that they just travel right through them. And for the most part, yeah, they do. If you get them very, very close, though, and you effectively have them in the near field, which, you know, that proximity would suggest, you might have a degree of capacitive coupling going on. It might detune the antennas. It also might feed back into the antennas, even though it's a non-resonant frequency. So that might be problematic. I mean, it would be relatively simple to use low power at first and make sure there's no situation that the RF is coming down the line or that the resonance of the antenna radiators have been affected by any kind of capacitive coupling. Have you tried them? I assume you have already, but have you tried them under low power circumstances?
I have. Not so much transmitting on the 500 megahertz antenna because that's a little too far away from the 440 for, you know, the radio that I've been using that's been overheating. I don't have the new radiator. I don't have the new radio yet, even though Amazon says I do. I don't have the new radio yet, so I can't test it that way. Which brings up another question, which I never thought about. Is there a formula for how far the radiators in a dipole, whether it be vertical or horizontal, how far they should be apart? Go ahead.
Okay, I need to know a little bit more about this. You say it's a dipole, but it's tuned to two different frequencies. So what exactly is it configured as? Is it collinear? Is it, you know, one behind the other? Or is it like a fan dipole where they're separated out next to each other? How exactly are these multiple frequency and one dipole configured?
To be on the same pole, on the same mast, but they are two separate dipoles. Got that?
Okay, so they're horizontal dipoles. They're on the same mast. Do they have the same axis, or are they 90 degrees or some degrees off angle from each other?
They're vertical dipoles. They're not horizontal dipoles. They're vertical dipoles, and the 500 megahertz dipole is just the top element of the 500 megahertz dipole. It's only about a half inch below the bottom element of two meter dipole on the same mast. Is that clear?
Okay, so I would assume this is a collinear antenna. A lot of we talked about last week, Comet and Diamond, are collinear verticals that are configured somewhat like what you said. Well, my gut feeling would be that it's perfectly fine because it was sort of designed for that degree of mild coupling going on. So I wouldn't be unduly concerned as long as the VisWas work reasonably well at both of the frequencies. I'm a little confused of what you're going to be operating at 500 megahertz because your transmitter is going to be at 440. So it's not going to be at 500, but maybe you think that it has broad enough coverage that it's going to be able to do that. But maybe I'm missing something.
And that's the original reason for the question. It's already cut. It's already mounted. It's been up there for a while now, the 500 megahertz dipole. I cut it for a whole different reason. But now that I'm getting a 440 radio, the question is, can I just leave that antenna that's cut 500, leave it as is, or do I need to cut it down to make it more, quote-unquote, more resonant? Go ahead.
Well, I wish I could tell you to cut it down to make it more resonant, but since you're going from 500 megahertz down to 440 megahertz, you're going to have to stretch it, because basically it's going to be somewhat capacitive at the 440 frequency that you're going to want to transmit at. And so you have to neutralize some of the antenna's capacitive impedance. And the way to do that is either with increased length so that it is once again mechanically resonant, or a loading coil introducing some series inductance, or something like a capacitive hat that will also make it appear longer electronically. So it's not a matter of shortening it. If you wanted to go from 440 to 500, you would shorten the element. You need to either electronically or mechanically lengthen your element in order for it to be resonant at 440.
Mistake. I did mean lengthen it. My mistake. Now, if I put a little coil on the end of, let's say, the upper element of the 500 megahertz antenna, can I just put it on one side, or would I have to put a coil of, and how would I figure out how many windings the coil should have? Should I put it, can I put it on just one element, or do they need to be equal sized and put on both ends of the vertical dipole.
I'm curious, when you first bought it, was it designed to operate at 440?
I made 2 meter in the 500 megahertz. The 500 megahertz antenna was made just for listening with my software-defined radio receiver.
Okay, so basically you're saying you... Let's kind of split it a half, because it's kind of complicating that there are two dipoles that are situated one after the other. So let's just deal with it as a vertically oriented half-wave dipole that's cut for 500 megahertz, and you want to bring it to 440. Now, theoretically, it's possible to resonate an antenna by adjusting the electronic length at one of the two legs. It would then be an off-center type of a dipole with slightly different characteristics. If you wanted to keep it a very simple half-wave center-fed dipole, you would have to lengthen it on both ends. You can either just tack on an extra piece of wire and tweak the length of it. Probably that would be the easiest thing for you to do. Or you can go to that webpage that we mentioned about 2 weeks ago. Ed and Chester told us about, and it's on my website, roy.ac2gs, that you can give it the length of the antenna element that you have, the frequency you want it to resonate, and it will give you a rough approximation of what kind of an inductance that you need to add to it to make it resonate. But again, my gut sense would be, if you have to use that antenna, that you tack on an extra bit of sturdy antenna metal conductor, and then shorten it when you find that your antenna analyzer that you already own shows that it's resonant on both legs.
What you're saying is that it's critical enough to take the darn thing down and recut a couple of new rods for the frequency that I'm going to be using it on and put it back up. Is that what, is it that critical, and that is what I should do?
Well, Rich, you know, there is a difference between 440 and 500. Theoretically, if you thought that your antenna analyzer could handle that frequency, which I'm not quite sure, you might want to run it through the antenna analyzer and see exactly what kind of impedance numbers you are going to get when you set the frequency instead of 500 megahertz to 440 megahertz. And that'll give you an idea of how much damage you have to fix. You know, theoretically, if by some magic you plug in an antenna analyzer that goes up to 440 and you see that there's only a 1.5 VSWR, then you don't have to waste your time or your effort. But my guess would be that you're going to find something higher than that.
Okay. And that's the opinion that I was looking for. So to do that, I will, the coil, because these are aluminum rods, the coil at the end of one of the elements, the upper element, I guess, will have to be clamped to the end of the upper element on the 500 megahertz antenna. And you say that website that has that formula can tell me exactly how many winds, you know, and what length that that coil should be to go from 440 or to go from 500 to 440?
Well, I know definitely that it gives the value in microhenries of an inductor, depending upon what location and what frequencies are involved and what have you. They may not exactly give you the specific number of coils and dimensions. I'm not sure. I don't recall. I saw it a couple weeks ago when I put it up on my website. But worse comes to worse, if they tell you that you need to place a 23 micro Henry coil, there are more than enough places that will plug in that number and give you a bunch of different options of how to make a coil that produces approximately that amount of inductance.
KD2MI with a comment.
Yes, please, give us your comment.
Good evening, name is John. Looking over, been listening to the mail here, it appears that they go from 500 megahertz back down to 440 megahertz. You would have to add an inch and a half to that dipole element. So each side should be lengthened only by 3/4 of an inch. There would be no need for trying to add an inductor on the end of each antenna element. Just simply add 3/4 of an inch to each side of that vertical dipole.
Okay, thank you very much, John. Yeah, I thought as much that although you'd need some kind of correction at those frequencies, you don't need a lot of length, so it probably would be incredibly easier to just somehow tack on some extra sturdy wire and use a little diagonal cutter to prune it back to a nice resonant frequency.
WA2VDH with a comment.
Yes, John.
Just a comment about the two dipoles being end to end. Since they're both in each other's null, where the dipole essentially is like a null, I don't think there would be too much interaction between them. It's true they are very close, but that is the end where the dipole kind of nulls out. So I don't think there would be too much interaction between them.
Okay, that's very possible. I kind of am always wary of when things are in the near field. The near field never quite works like anyone's taught. You know, we're pretty much taught a lot about far field effects. Near field effects are almost magical. But I could see where it wouldn't have that much effect. And as I've mentioned before, collinear designed antennas are very common in the UHF-VHF realm. So it's being done regularly with a great benefit. Anyone else with any comments on this particular question? I think, Rich, we've kind of given you something to think about. Again, if that antenna analyzer of yours can handle 440, it'll make life a little bit easier, but otherwise, I'm sure there are other ways that you could tweak it. But I think it just needs a wee bit of listening, unfortunately. I don't think you can quite get away with it without change if you're going to go from 500 to 440.
Kilo 2, Tango Alpha Sierra with a late check-in and question.
Yes, what's your first name?
First name here is Tasso. Tango Alpha Sierra Oscar, and the call again is Kilo 2 Tango Alpha Sierra.
Okay, Tasso, you're next after Russell. Russell checked in about 10-15 minutes ago. So, Rich, if you're out there, I haven't heard you for a little while. Any questions or comments about what we've been knocking around?
Can you Whiskey 2 Bravo?
You're cutting out of the repeater once again. I don't know what might be causing it this time. I thought we had solved it with your little a fan on your handy talkie, but it, you're breaking out of it. You might be over-modulating, or it might be the overheating problem that you've had before. I don't know. But you're cutting out about two-thirds of the time.
KG2RY, I have a question.
Okay, David, is that a question related to this subject, or do you have your own question?
It's my own question.
Okay, David, so we'll put you on the list after Tasso, who comes after Russell, okay?
QSO.
Okay, Rich, we'll try one more time. I'm thinking that you're having some kind of handy talkie failure and you're just not able to capture the repeater for some odd reason. But we'll give you one more try and see if you can communicate with us on the repeater right now. Okay, Rich, only noise heard, so there's something going on a little wonky on your end. Hopefully we've given you enough information to think about it, and if you're able to get back on the air later tonight, or we can talk about it during the week, or we can talk about it next Sunday at the next technical mess. Rich, I hope you figure out what's going on with your radio right now, and we'll talk to you soon. Let me turn to the next person on the list, Russell. You have a question or a topic tonight?
Oh, thank you, NetControl. This is Russell K. You know, as I sit here waiting my turn in the last 15 minutes, I actually corrected the problem. I had such a faux pas moment, and I'm almost embarrassed to say. But I thought my radio was not trained. My ICOM 746, there was no modulation, no increase in power on sideband. On AM, I would see a dead keeper, no modulation. And on FM, you know, I could see power as I increased and decreased. And I was transmitting a tone, but I wasn't accessing any repeaters, let alone this repeater. And I started to panic, like this could have just happened. So that's when I checked in with my handheld, only to realize that I had completely turned the microphone gain all the way down to minimum without seeing it. I must have been half asleep an hour ago, and I didn't even realize I did it. I'm actually sorry. So this is KD2RMD, but thank you for taking my check-in. I feel like such a schmuck right now.
You shouldn't, Russell. We all do questionable things. We get distracted. We get confused. Very often, when I have two radios that are activated at the same time, I will kind of lose track of which of them is the one that I'm transmitting on and transmit on a completely different band to the conversation I thought I was having with someone. So we all have things like that happen to us. So don't worry about it, Russell. This too has passed. So keep listening, and if you have any future questions, you know where to bring them.
W2HO with a question.
Okay, Howard, I am putting you on the list. It has grown to a rather long list, thankfully. So you'll be after Tassel and David. So thank you again, Russell, for participating, and, you know, don't feel bad. I just want to point out someone's trying to get my attention, and unfortunately it is 100% noise. All I hear is noise. I can't even make out a voice. So I'm terribly sorry if I'm not responding to you. It's because I don't have a clue who you might be, so I can't recognize you, unfortunately. And if it's a problem with antenna position, you might want to move your antenna. If you are able to raise the gain, feel free to raise the gain. But right now, it's just a noise signal. Okay, next on our list is Tasso. Do you have a question tonight?
Yes, thanks for passing it over. My question is an antenna question. I just moved to a new QTH. I'm setting up my my antennas, and my old house, I was blessed to have the room and the ability to hang a fan dipole, and also a G5RV, which I used from 40 meters and up. Problem being that in this location, I can only put up what seems to be an N-Fed. I experimented with a random wire. It seemed to work well with the un-un transformer physically in my shack. The only problem is it caused a lot of RF issues. So what I've been doing is I've been experimenting with moving the transformer outside of the shack. Let me drop it real quick. The question that I have is with the random wire un-un transformer, would it be a better idea for me to have it hanging up? In other words, I'll be able to hang it up about 30 feet off the ground, and then have the counterpoise, the ground, hang off of the transformer, and then be able to hang it parallel to the radiating element. Or would it be a better idea for me to have the un-un down near my radiating element, down by my counterpoise, and then hang the radiating element, in other words, have that pulled upwards 40 feet up?
Okay, I'm a little confused by the ups and downs. Let's just do the end set. We'll hit the counterpoise after I'm sure of this. The N-Fed is kind of probably sloping at a somewhat horizontal angle across your property.
Yeah, so let me set it up a little better. What I've done is I've hung a rope from my chimney over to a tree in my backyard. So this rope is what I'm hoping to attach my radiating element to of the N-Fed random wire. So in other words, it would go straight up to this rope and then run along the rope all the way to the tree from my house. And my idea is to have the counterpoise running along my fence, which is right below this rope.
Okay, I think that would work. The problem with N-Fed antennas, as you mentioned, is that they tend to have problems with RF getting into your shack, especially if your un-un is located in your shack. You can't have it too far away because to some degree, the visual is not going to be perfect, and so the longer the coaxial cable is from the antenna tuner or whatever you're using to match impedances is going to introduce an increased attenuation loss. So you want to try and keep the coax relatively short, but I don't think you'd particularly want it in the shack. If you can place some nice beefy RF chokes, ferrite clamps, before it enters into your house, that probably would help a little bit also, getting rid of some of the common mode reflections coming into the house.
Yeah, so I have, I've made a balun, a one-to-one balun with a MiX 31 ferrite that I'm using right before the un-un, and then the random wire. So that's pretty much, that's helping. But my question is, would it be a better idea for me to hang the un-un up in the air, together with my wire on the rope, leading out to the tree, suspended at 40 feet, and then run the counterpoise down, and then in parallel to the, random wire, or should I put the un-un down by the counterpoise and then bring my end-fed wire up to the rope and then across. So in other words, is it better to have the random wire slope at the beginning, or should I have it go straight the whole way?
Well, what degree of slope are you talking about?
I can make it anywhere from a 90-degree angle, so I can mount my unknown on my fence and then put the random wire straight up and then have it go straight along the rope. I could slope it at 45 degrees so that it meets the rope and then it shoots straight out. And then my other option is not to have the random wire actually jet off at all, just have it go straight and parallel with the rope the whole time. But the problem with that is I would have to slope or just bring down my counterpoise perpendicular to the random wire.
Is there any option where the elevation of the end-fed is higher than other configurations?
I don't know what you mean by that.
Unfortunately, I'm not getting a really good sense of the location of these things. I get the sense that the option is for it to either be kind of low and horizontal or upsloping, and I might have that completely wrong. So I'm just trying to get a sense for whether the elevation of the end-fed component of your antenna is higher or the same at the feed point with the different type of configurations you're considering.
I got it. Yeah, it's probably my fault. I'm not doing a very good job of describing it. Let me punt this off till next week. I'll send you, I could send an email in with just a little drawing so we can get a better idea of it. Maybe we can hash this out next week.
Comment?
Yes, please comment.
I think I have a pretty good mindset as to what he's describing. With end-fed dipoles and random length antennas, grounding is critical. Grounding means everything because there's going to be a transformer. The random length wire that comes out of the transformer that I'm assuming it is, I mean, you can make it really straight, but don't be afraid to bend or manipulate that wire. And the counterpoise that comes out the back transformer, you can pretty much orient that anywhere. You can even put it into the shack, which is what a lot of apartment people do. So the actual physical setup of an end-fed antenna isn't all that important, but when you're having trouble with RF, and a lot of people have trouble with RF, with end-fed antennas, because of how they operate, sometimes you just might have to just have a little bit of acceptance that it's always going to be an issue, but you have to have an extremely good ground with that type of antenna. So don't stretch out that random length wire. You could pretty much put that anywhere. If I stuck it out my window, I would try and attach it to a tree. Now, if the tree is directly, in line with the transformer balance and making the wire straight, great. But if I have to bend, twist, slope, then so be it. It's not a big deal. So if you continue to have trouble with the RF, grounding, that's the key point with that type of antenna. Over.
All right, great. So do you think it would be better for me to have a random wire straight, or because I could do that just fine, or would it be okay if I sloped it, which, I mean, I could do that too. Either way is fine. It's just I want to know which way is better. And also, I know that I've read that grounding is really critical. What I've come out with is a 17-foot counterpoise, which seems to be the ideal length for everything 40 meters and up, from what I've read. In addition to that, I have all my equipment in the shack is well grounded. I've never had really RF problems before. I've tried, the one time I tried the random wire inside the shack was the only time I had RF problems. So I think that my grounding is decent. Do you recommend anything better than the 17-foot counterpoise?
comment.
Yes, please, comment.
K2GJE. Is that NFED a half wave? Because an NFED half